Gentlemen, this is the Subcommittee of Transportation Economic Development, and this afternoon, we're going to go ahead with a public hearing on Senate Bill 879 and public hearing 874. I beg your pardon. I'm not good with numbers. Okay. Let's see, we're going to do a public hearing. Actually, I was trying to remember Lori's name. Lori Byerly is representing us from Legislative Fiscal Office, and Suki Huerta is our committee assistant today. And we're going to do a public hearing first on joint Senate Bill 874 and House Bill 3441. So, and we've got a couple of folks that have signed up to speak to both of those. And why don't we go ahead and have Lori just give us a brief explanation of what these two particular bills do.
Good afternoon, Chair Butler, a member of the subcommittee. In front of you, you should see a couple of staff measure summaries. One is in white, one is in yellow. The white one relates to House Bill 3441. If you recall, a couple months ago, during unemployment department budget hearing testimony, we discussed quite substantially the Jobs Plus program, the history behind it, where it was going, what was happening with the funding. This particular bill would create a diversion that would set aside some of the unemployment insurance tax money to supply funds to continue a Jobs Plus program. This diversion specifically sets aside about $25 million that would be used for the program over the next four years or until the money ran out. This particular chunk of money would only be for the unemployment insurance side of the program. And I know we discussed before that there is an adult and family services component as well. In companion to that, Senate Bill 874 is related to the Jobs Plus program itself, and this makes some program changes that will help cut down on some of the costs of the program to kind of tie in with this diversion funding so that the funding is adequate to support the program. I believe this level of funding is supposed to assist about 2,400 workers get into the program and achieve success and job skills for that program. Some of the changes that are involved in the program is to limit the reimbursement for employers to $5 per hour. That's a change from the previous program. And there's also some new requirements about how quickly those individuals would enter the program. So that's kind of a brief summary. I don't have a fiscal impact statement, a formal statement prepared for you today. I do have some information if we get into detail. There are still some massaging that needs to be done on at least one of the bills, and we will at some point in time get down to the exact numbers.
Okay. Thank you very much, Larry. Other questions, Representative Smith?
Yeah, just a quick question. You say it reduces it down to $5 per hour. What has it been in the past?
I believe it was minimum wage. Yeah, minimum wage $6.50. So this is putting it's capping it a little bit lower level than before.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for Lori? We'll go ahead and the first to sign up is from the Department of Employment, not unemployment. Ms. Crosley, Virginia Crosley, and Frank Ritchie.
Chair members, I'm Virginia Crosley, the director of the Oregon Employment Department, and I have Frank Ritchie, who works in our unemployment insurance program analysis section. I do have testimony that should be available. Thank you. All right. On Senate Bill 874, the committee staff has outlined some of the changes. I want to make sure that you know some of the other things that bill does. One, it would require that all applicants for the unemployment insurance benefits would receive a Jobs Plus brochure when they were applying for unemployment insurance benefits, and they would learn about the program when they first came in.
Is that fairly spendy, or is that something?
No, Mr. Chair, we're actually doing that now.
Okay.
We're doing it by sort of a program option, but we are currently doing that already.
Okay.
Do you mind being interrupted for questions?
I don't.
Please, Representative Johnson.
Would the idea of the brochure to describe not only the option of the program, but what the sidebars are on the program? So this is really notice about how the program works.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, that's correct. It would tell them how long they could do it, whether they're education account that they would be building when they could be looking for work during that period of time, that they are in a jobs plus job, because the bill also talks about after they work so many hours in a jobs plus opportunity, that they are allowed a certain amount of hours still on that job opportunity to look for jobs. So it would have both.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
Is there any benefit in having an applicant acknowledge that they have read the brochure so that there's a clear understanding of what the expectations of the program are?
That's an interesting comment, Mr. Chen, Representative Johnson. We could look at that. One of the things...
The old lawyer in me, I apologize.
Okay. We do have them sign the application for unemployment insurance benefits, of which this is an eligibility for both. You have to be eligible for unemployment insurance to be able to be also eligible for the Jobs Plus. But it's something that we could look at. The difficulty would be beyond the first time that they applied, because if you remember in unemployment insurance, that you reapply and you're reauthorized each week. In other words, you have to do certain things like look for other work, you have to be able, available, and actively seeking. So each week, you could have a person that didn't qualify for Jobs Plus initially, but eventually could, because they would not be, for example, if we adjudicate a claim and you are not eligible the first week, for example, you wouldn't get the brochure because you're not eligible for unemployment insurance. But the next week, you might be eligible. And you would get
it. I understand. There are a number of complexities that you're pointing out to me that I hadn't anticipated. The point I was trying to make was constructive notice of what the rules are and an acknowledgement that constructive notice has been received, and that was the point I was
trying
to make.
Thank you, and I think that we should look for some kind of acknowledgement in that regard, and we'll take a look at that.
And the Jobs Plus brochure, program brochure, does emphasize work first, is that right?
It emphasizes work.
Okay.
We don't, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Please proceed.
The second thing that it does is place a time requirement on when a person would be begin to be referred. The bill's language requires to begin reviewing the recipient for referral to an unsubsidized or a subsidized job, so to a Jobs Plus job or a job that is not subsidized, no later than the fourth week after the week in which the recipient applied for unemployment insurance benefits. And we believe that we can begin reviewing them. One of the things that we do is within that first 4 weeks, we do look to see whether they're actually eligible. We also look to see whether they are attached to an employer. This allows us to know if they are not going to come back to their original employer, then they should be referred to other types of work. And so we believe that this is something that we can do without too much problem. The I see 5 and 6. This is real. They must have. I think they deleted things from another testimony. This
three and four.
Yes, I have not a clue, Mr. Chair. What? 3 and 4. I'm just looking at this.
We've never had much luck with numbers.
I see. Yes. Requires the department in the eighth week after the week in which the recipient applied for UI benefits to reassess the reemployability and, if appropriate, refer the Jobs Plus job. And we have an administrative rule that already does that. We look at them at the front end, and then 8 weeks later, we have kind of a fail-safe, if you will, to relook at them again. And this would put that in statute instead of just an administrative rule. It would limit the time on a Jobs Plus program to 13 weeks. Currently, it is 6 months. One of the reasons why this is seen as being more appropriate is the cost-benefit analysis for the current program is more costly than the unemployment insurance, the regular unemployment insurance program, and this will make it more cost-effective, but it will also mean that employers would still have a period of time to see whether a person is benefiting from that opportunity. It's kind of like a trial service, so it doesn't completely eliminate that. Then it allows for the referral of claimants to a Jobs Plus job for which the claimant does not have adequate skills. This came from a discussion with the proponents of the bill that wanted to ensure that it did not conflict with suitability, which the governor was pretty firm on, but did encourage people who could benefit from the program and learn new skills. In unemployment insurance, you look to see whether a person's job opportunity that they're being referred to is suitable. In other words, whether it's based on their prior learning, their prior earnings, and other kinds of factors. In this one, it says, well, if, for example, I'm a bookkeeper, but I am offered a job plus opportunity to be an accountant and start getting, you know, accounting experience, then that would be allowed as well. It would also limit, as we said earlier, the $5 per hour instead of $6.50, but the other thing it does is eliminate the current wage-related cost reimbursement, which is somewhere currently around 10 to 11%. Those would be payroll taxes. In this particular new program, it would not authorize the wage-related reimbursement to employers, again, to make the program more cost-effective. It would authorize and encourage contracting with private job placement firms for job recruitment and placement services, and there is this provision cannot conflict with federal requirements for providing state labor exchange services. Can't be the only place it's authorized, for example. The bill does go hand in hand with the other bill that you will be hearing today, House Bill 3441. So there are some things in Senate Bill 874 that we are discussing with Jill Lynn, Associated Oregon Industries Labor Representatives in the Governor's Office. It will require a borrowing from a CDAF, the Supplemental Administrative Funds, if you remember from our budget discussions, for a short time to be able to operate the program without it stopping. In other words, we, under a diversion, which is in House Bill 3441, you can't have an emergency clause on a tax bill from legislative council, so there does need to be a borrowing. The amount of the borrowing is one of the elements that is still being discussed, but it would need an emergency clause amendment to Senate Bill 874 to accomplish that, and then it would also need to tell us how much that borrowing amount should be. The other thing, we have a budget note on our current budget as it left the subcommittee to come back to an emergency board should we need additional staff and expenditure limitation. To have no break in the program, we will need authorization, and we hope to not have to come back to an emergency board if we can get agreement. And our fiscal impact that we have filed, at least, would need 22.9 FTEs to administer the Jobs Plus program. We had had those positions, and in our budget as it passed out, those were deleted because the bills had not had been passed by the legislature. The other thing that I need to bring to your attention is this is only the unemployment insurance piece of the Jobs Plus program. The direct pay unit that reimburses employers right now is in the Department of Human Services, and there is not a complementary bill to reauthorize the Adult and Family Services portion of this. If that is not reauthorized, and that discussion is happening outside of this subcommittee, but if that doesn't happen, then there would need to be at least two positions to reauthorize the payment of the funding to the employers that is currently done within the Department of Human Services. In other words, it would shift that to the Employment Department from the Department of Human Services.
Verlina, you say there isn't a complementary piece
there
of legislation right now?
Correct. Senate Bill 874 allows the program to still run, but there's not a funding mechanism that has been authorized for the welfare side.
Where is that going to be picked up at? How does that?
Chair Butler, members of the subcommittee, how does the funding get picked up for the Adult Family Services?
Right.
I believe that's part of the budget discussion, perhaps within the Department of Human Services budget.
And that
that funding had come from TANF dollars.
Right, and that's, I thought that's what the...
General fund, too.
Yeah, I thought that the TANF, as I read your SMS, I thought that the TANF came out of the Senate Bill 874. Is not?
Senate, Representative Butler, members of the subcommittee, the Senate Bill 874, its language does discuss the whole program from both the unemployment insurance side and the adult family services side.
Okay.
I believe the program changes that Ms. Crosley will discuss are only pertain to the UI participants.
And joint.
And joint participants.
Participation.
These changes wouldn't impact AFS only clients that participate in the program. Those changes.
They'd be both unemployed and beneficiaries or capable of being beneficiaries of TANF. Mm-hmm.
Typically, there are food stamp resistance,
right,
and unemployment. Those would be covered under Senate Bill 874.
Okay, what are we excluding then, Verlina?
TANF only, welfare.
Oh, okay.
Or only food stamp.
Okay. That are unemployed at that point.
But not eligible for unemployment insurance. In other words, if you haven't worked
outside
long
enough. Outside of the scope, either having been too long outside of the system or not in the system long enough.
Representative,
please.
Sure. I believe that Mr. Courtney, when he comes to testify, may have some additional information on the funding in the AFS area that he could share with the subcommittee if
okay.
There's interest.
All right, yes. Thank you. As you're well aware, Vernon and I like graphs, and so if I can draw it out in a graph format, so I know. Yeah, and so does Senator Yee.
Yes, I like graphs, too. A picture is worth a thousand words.
And that's an old Chinese saying, too,
yes.
Isn't it?
That's a good saying.
Yep.
And Mr. Chair and members, House Bill 3441A then is the diversion bill from the trust fund, the unemployment insurance trust fund, to allow approximately $25 million diversion. And I'm going to have Frank walk you through the testimony on 3441.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Frank Ritchie. I'm with the Employment Department and the Programs and Analysis section. Excuse me. The 3441, as it was amended and as that is in front of you, is a financing piece for the Jobs Plus Unemployment Wage Fund, which does cover the costs of wage reimbursements and administrative costs related to Jobs Plus for people that are eligible for unemployment insurance and in the Jobs Plus program. It would finance the program as described in Senate Bill 874 and would result in a diversion that would last through the calendar years 2002 through 2000, into 2005. And finances basically the program that we've been discussing. And I think it does cover a program of an estimated 2,450 workers per year, which is numbers that we discussed with the proponents and others.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Comment, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Butler. I might have missed this one that I stepped out of the room. Can you tell me what type of companies take advantage of the Job Plus program?
There is retail, a lot of chambers of commerce, public agencies, not-for-profits. Goodwill is, I think, probably one of the largest users. Department of Human Services, I think, is the largest user, and temp agencies.
Follow up, Representative Smith.
How do you handle clients who are used to making a family wage, who have been laid off at a mill or have been laid off from another company, and now they're being told, here's a brochure, go work retail or go work one of those businesses when they're used to making $17 to $25 an hour?
Chair and Representative Smith, that was one of the areas that the governor was most firm in, letting the bill go forward, just like or another type of job reemployment strategy. Suitability looked at, as you indicated, your prior wage. And so within an amount of time, we allow them to look for a subsidized or unsubsidized that would match that wage without pushing them very quickly into an underemployment scenario. The question that has been discussed and debated before we got to Ways and Means was how long should a person be able to look for a job. And so you will see the changes that came out in amendments are a compromise to that scenario. In other words, allow them, start reviewing them at say 4 weeks, 5 weeks, look at them again in 8 weeks, and we call it step down provisions. Give them a certain amount of time, up to about 8 weeks, for them to look on their own. Then you start getting progressively harsher with their job search. They might have to expand their job search and driving further. They might have to look at less desirable wages. One of the reasons why the governor is most firm in that, our research shows that up to about 14 weeks, between 12 and 14 weeks, a person who goes back by their own free look, if you will, and that could be in an unsubsidized or a subsidized, stays longer, their retention is longer because they were interested in that type of work, and their pay is typically more suitable to them. In other words, it more matches what they had before. Once you get after that, they take less desirable. And the question is, how fast do you make that happen?
I appreciate Representative Smith's question because I'm going to have to admit I'm woefully inadequate as to the knowledge that I have as to jobs policy. You've opened up a real sense. I see in my own district the folks that are saying we really depended upon jobs policy. They were great for us. Were people like the Department of Human Services and my regional development officers or the county development officers or even within my justice courts and those kinds of things. Why is it that those are the jobs that are the quickest ones to snap these people up? What's the reason for that?
I think that
not that they're bad jobs, and it's not that they're bad employees. It just seemed like that they always
probably gravitate. more turnover. There's more women in the job search program than in the regular unemployment insurance program that take into retail and into clerical positions, for example, in not-for-profits, the chambers, whatever. Those tend to be more what I would consider and what we hear considered more traditional women-dominated positions, for example. So if you look at the demographics, you will see more of those gravitation, if you will, toward those jobs, Mr. Chair, where more of the manufacturing, where the displacements are occurring, the energy jobs that are occurring, those have been typically more male-oriented, not always, but more male-dominated, so that if you look at who's unemployed in those areas, it typically is male.
And the employment rate, the rate is still negotiated between the parties? Okay. All right, follow up, Representative Smith. Thank you, Representative Smith. That's an excellent line of question. All of a sudden, it just dawned on me that that's where a lot of mine and some of the counties are going. Please follow up, Representative.
I guess as a follow up to these questions, what outreach is available to those companies that do provide higher wage jobs to let them know, one, that there's a block of employees out there that need that work, and then two, that there's also a program to assist them in utilizing these funds?
We have job developers that actually market the program at the local level with all employers, frankly. Interestingly enough, the majority of people who list the jobs for Jobs Plus reimbursement tend to be the lower wage
It's not always true, because we have some that are up to $20, but it does tend to be right around the $8.50 price range, just to be real honest.
Just follow, continue, please, Jeff.
In my other life as a port employee, my job is to attract industry. And over the last 5 years, we've probably brought in 10 different companies, and not one of them has used this program. And it's unfortunate, because somehow we need to get the word out to them.
Yes, and personal mailing to every size, frankly, employer. We have knocked on the doors of many of those high-wage employers, very much in the high-tech area, the manufacturing companies that are doing new hirings. But typically speaking, they just have not, and when we ask them why, they say they don't need to.
One last question.
Please follow up.
I'm going to ask a real straightforward question. I hope you don't take offense to it.
I would not.
Is there a perception that there's too much bureaucracy in the program and it's just not worth the subsidy?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I believe that that's part of it, but I don't believe that it's all of it, because in fact, some of the employers that you're talking about may be actually using them, but they're hiring through a temp agency. A lot of high-tech companies, as you probably have heard, actually hire through, the temporary agency. So they may actually be using the program or an parts of the program without it. We've gotten very good feedback from the employers that use it, that it is very minimal.
They are able to use it, yes.
And then they pass on those savings to the other, the regular employee. Actually, they do, because that's something that we trust, yeah. So they really do that. But generally speaking, we have heard that it is, regulation. But then we also know that they use credits. We have the work opportunity tax credit and some of those kinds of things that employers use. And, so I don't think it's total. I just believe that they tend to market their jobs in a way that typically doesn't list with the types of methods that are being used. In other words, they are very internal. They will promote from within or by word of mouth.
I think the perception is, and this is from an industry mm-hmm. perspective, that the quality mm-hmm. of the employee that you're going to get from this program isn't sufficient to what their needs are. And somehow I think that's a barrier that needs to be overcome.
And I have talked to many high-tech companies about this program, and I will have to say that in some cases they're very right. The match between what they need and want versus what they would get. On the other hand, they're getting a wage subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have it both ways. You see what I'm saying?
But in effect, Verlina, let me see if I can. Let me make sure I understand where we're going. In effect, in that process, if it's a high-tech industry and they're willing to have somebody come out for $10 an hour, and they're expecting that somebody's got super, super skills, that's super trained in this, I mean, that person that just lost their job down at the .com, and they're coming down the street, they're looking for $25 an hour, and they've got the skills to market for $25, and the new .comer wants them for that, they're really not a candidate for Jobs Plus. They're not going to be 16 or 13 weeks or 26 weeks in the system, are they?
Actually, the longer, the highest amount of time on an unemployment insurance claim will be anybody in this room, myself, any professional. That is, you add about a week from every $10,000 actually, and a lot of HR people keep statistics on that. You are much, if you looked at our demographics within our unemployment insurance, and I think that is one of the things to your earlier question, is that anybody can qualify for unemployment insurance, and I have way
more numbers right now that are being unemployed from very good jobs that are on unemployment. They will also be what we consider the most likely to exhaust their claim, because the jobs that they're being displaced from are very highly paid, but there's not a competing type of industry that will bring them in very, very quickly. Although they have been managers, they've been, you know, accountants or bookkeepers or whatever, there's just, in the system, it takes them pretty considerable amounts of time to match their benefits, match their income, match their training levels, match whatever.
You don't have to do that. I mean, the people are looking for an employment position.
It takes about 6 months, Mr. Chair, for a professional, on the average, to even get in the door to another professional company. Just their screening. Most of it's done through two or three different types of interview processes. They have different types of experiences they put them through. Sometimes they meet with the board, sometimes, I mean, I'm just talking even about the professional
really not, those folks are really not Jobs Plus candidates.
Oh, yeah. Anybody who's qualified, and I think that that's where we've hurt ourselves, because we've said it's for those people who would not otherwise get a job. No. It is anybody who is unemployed is eligible for unemployment insurance as long as they worked, you know, enough time and they were laid off through no fault of their own. And typically, if you want to look at the layoffs that we're seeing right now, it is very high income, very highly skilled people.
And
those all qualify for Job Plus.
And so they have an opportunity then to go ahead and hold out for the highest wage and most benefits and all of the other kinds of resources within the job. That's interesting. Representative Johnson is recognized.
Two questions that arise as a result of this exchange. One of the programs that had been administered, I think, through your agency was one of the retraining programs. And I was always curious, what led me to think of this was the line of the exchange that you guys just had in trying to find parity with the departed salary and the new salary. I was always curious with the dislocated worker who was making the decisions about the level of retraining. I used to be in the helicopter business, and periodically we'd have people come in and at age 45 announce that they wanted to start a career as a long-line helicopter pilot, and I was always sort of surprised that they would be encouraged to do that at a time when typically a pilot's career was declining. What were the screening mechanisms for the dislocated worker, and you try to find salary parity, or was it pretty much wide open?
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the agency put out what are demand occupations, and probably the one that you talked about would be a demand occupation. The actual referral to training and referral to jobs for the dislocated workers tended to be through the community colleges and the Title I-B programs, which at that time, the last time it was operated, was through economic development. The screening mechanism was more, was there jobs available rather than some of the interest pieces and some of the pieces that you talked about. And frankly, we're not very successful. And you probably are aware of that. And you were right.
Thank you for how candid that answer was. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Virginia, please proceed.
I think, Mr. Chair, in House Bill 3441, what we would bring attention to you is an element on the first page that I want to make sure that you understand. The alternative that we have raised to the governor's office is in the bill as it would sit before you would have a the diversion piece, but we also need that borrowing that needs to be in Senate Bill 874. So you do need to have both of those pieces. And then the May forecast that prompted the 2450, if you remember when we were in front of you, they were trying to make a bill that would not trigger a tax increase. And in fact, the economy has had some things happen in it. In other words, it's gotten worse, And so we will trigger into a higher tax rate despite this bill, okay? And that meant that the range that we were looking at, which was right around $7.5 million, right, in 2003, has now been opened up. So we are back in discussion now with Gels Lynn, with the governor's office, AOI, and labor, and obviously with this committee about what size of the program should be offered, how many people should be open, if you will, and available to, in an economy that, frankly, right now is not creating a whole lot of new jobs. The net new jobs is significantly down. We briefed the governor on that. And if we operate with a new program, which you're seeing that we're going to be doing, we're concerned that, and the governor's office asked me to make sure that you knew this, that we're concerned that we don't oversell this program because it will be harder to market. I mean, just to be real honest, it'll be harder to market with employers. And the governor's office is concerned that if not done appropriately, because we don't audit this program, an employer self-certifies that it's a new job, and we don't want to make it hugely bureaucratic for some of the reasons Representative Smith talked about. At the same time, the governor's office is concerned about abuses. In other words, when you are laying off employees, you know, that you don't then hire under the Jobs Plus to then lay off existing employees. So with those, I just want to make sure that you know those are some of the trade-offs that are being discussed.
That's covered under 3440.
Correct.
Thank you very
much.
You're welcome. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Let's see, Senator Paul. We'll stand at ease for just a moment. We may move into just a technical.